you're listening to the Talking Spirit Animecast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yep.
Today's episode is our part two of our spring 2020 anime season reviews. Got not quite as many shows together that I wanted to, but we have some cool stuff in here that is going to be fun to talk about either way. And we could finally reveal what Andrew's gem of the season was that was in this part that Chris guessed wrong. It was like, it was before we watched the last episode of Gleipnir, or was it after? He's like, was it Gleipnir that was your gem of the season? And I'm like, I completely forgot that I'd mentioned that. So I'm like, no, Gleipnir's not my gem of the season. And it dawned on me why he was saying that was because it would have been in this list, because I told him on our last episode it would be in this list. But yes, I can finally reveal what that is. No, it's not Gleipnir. It's far from Gleipnir. But we'll talk about Gleipnir when we get to Gleipnir. But I like saying Gleipnir for some reason.
It is a goofy name.
It's a weird name. Does it mean something?
I'm sure it does.
Is it like the name of something? Maybe it's like a fish or something? I don't know. Anyways, yes, we have this episode, Princess Connect Redive, Gleipnir, Shiro Neko Project Zero Chronicle, obviously the one that's my gem of the season. Joking. Kaguya-sama Love is War Season 2 would be a gem of the season, but we already knew it was going to be amazing, so I can't really say that. BNA, Brand New Animal, which wouldn't be it because we technically watched that after I said that. I'm already giving it away. Sugusugu Momo, so I'm going to stop talking. And High Score Girl Season 2, which I guess technically High Score Girl, I think, was fall 2019, but it released on Netflix in spring of 2020. So we're putting in here just like we did with Doro Hey Doro. So it's just something we're doing now because it makes it easier to get these reviews out quicker. But yes, without further ado, let's dive right into our first one. We have Princess Connect Redive. This one was streaming on Crunchyroll for 13 episodes. The studio is Sai Games Pictures. The source is a game. The genres are action, adventure, fantasy. The director was Takaomi Kanasaki, who did Konosuba and Tokyo Ravens. The creator was, of course, Sai Games, who does a lot of mobile games, including Rage of Bahamut and Grand Blue Fantasy. And yes, one takes place in kind of a fantasy setting. Seems very kind of, you know, typical to the fantasy realm, magic, dragons, all that kind of stuff. And we quickly meet a nameless boy who has no recollection of his memories, very amnesiac, is confronted by a girl named Kokoro, who Kokoro comes there, finds him, and says that, you know, she was destined to meet him. It was ordained that she would meet him and serve him. And she gives him the name Yuki, and then they kind of work together to build a guild, which is focused on making really good foods, along with Kero, who is a Neko mage, and Pekorin, who is a girl with a crown and a really large sword that's able to do insanely impressive damage to things, oddly enough. Big old claymore kind of damage.
And has a large appetite.
Yes, very, very large appetite, and really loves to just be happy and spread joy with people, even though Keru is totally tsundere and doesn't like it. But yeah.
Genki always wins. I mean, yeah, just saying.
You can't fight it. You can't fight it. But yeah, this one essentially kind of, I think I said my first impressions, and it kind of held through the entire thing, is very Konosuba. So if you ever watch Konosuba and you love that show, you just got to go watch this show. No questions asked, pretty much. Of course, it's made by the same director, so I guess that's kind of why it gives it kind of a feel of that.
I got the impression that they kind of gave him free rein to just have fun, and that's what he did. He just went full Konosuba on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned one of the earliest funny things is like when Kokoro first meets Yuki, and he just doesn't know anything. Can't defend himself or anything like that. She would suddenly just turn to her face for a minute and then turn back to him, and he'd be dragged away by just the bug-eyest looking wolves that you could ever see. And then they'd go and they'd go camping, and then she'd look away and she'd look back at him, and he'd be dragged away again by the wolves. It's very, very dorky like that. But yeah, your thoughts on Princess Connect Redive?
I had a lot of fun with this show. Like we were saying, I mean, having the kind of Konosuba feel, it exudes goofy hijinks all the way through. I mean, there was some kind of grander quest that started to show its colors through the show. But when it comes down to it, this was just a full-on excuse to just do goofy things with a lot of just whacked out crazy characters. We have an elf girl who randomly shows up and is trying to is too shy to talk, and so talks through kind of a what is the term where you throw your voice on a puppet and have it talk, and that's what they did with Mannequin, ventriloquist,
yeah, like a wooden puppet.
Yeah, and that caused an entire goofy scenario there. We have a whole bunch of funny, goofy things that just have, and plus there was a lot of charm in here where we have a group of lollies who want to create their own guild and training them up and practicing on how to become a guild. There was just a lot of fun in here, a lot of warm moments, and just a great all around show.
Lolly training quest. Which went terribly wrong because people don't know directions. this is the gem of the season for me. It's one of those ones. It's funny because it's like coming into it, and I should have kind of anticipated something. And I don't remember if we noted that I think we did note the fact that the director was the same one that did Konosuba. But even with that kind of knowing that there is a director that worked on something you really enjoy, they don't always get free reign to work on things the way they want to and really turn into something really fantastic. Granted, I've never played the game. This is based off of a mobile game. I've checked it out before because they had a crossover with ReZero about the time that ReZero was getting really popular. And I just watched some of the clips of that and I was like, I really want this game because it's got, you know, Rim and Ram in it. But it was, you don't really necessarily think that just because a director that worked on something you enjoyed is with this thing. And turns out that, again, that feel was in there, that really goofy, great directing that just makes every punchline just hit, every single goofy thing that hits perfectly. And I guess the other thing that I don't really give too much credit for, and I should have, is the fact that it was Cygames. This is Cygames trying to promote their own product. So obviously they're going to do an excellent job on it. We've kind of kept an eye on Cygames, the studio, for quite a while now. And it was kind of shortly after Rage of Bahamut came really huge that we noted that Cygames was working on a new Rage of Bahamut anime, and we were getting all super excited for that. Turned out to be a very short Yuri-esque one, but it was a really fantastic little short, you know, considering it was just based off of a single event within the game. They turned it into something that was actually really well put together. Directing on it was really fantastic. So I guess I didn't give credit enough when I seen Cygames picture that they were going to do a fantastic. This show is really incredibly animated, and it's like, even though I say it's Konosuba-esque, it's like Konosuba with really great artwork and fantastic animation. Not to say that Konosuba was garbage, but it didn't look that great. I mean, we noted that in the first season, it just didn't look that great, and I think that was to the comical style of it. But this one's kind of going more for keeping the characters on model, looking really fantastic, having great facial expressions, and these, like, incredibly well-animated action scenes that just, like, why is this in a comedy? Comedies are supposed to be very low budget, all about the punchlines. This one's, like, going all out with some crazy action scenes that are just, you know, not affordable levels, but pretty darn close. Like, as close as you can get to it without having, like, crazy CGI blending with animation to make it look like really photorealistic. And so I definitely give it credit for having fantastic animation, fantastic punchlines and joke executions based on the directing and writing. It just has everything going for it. Plus, really fantastic characters, a really great kind of colorful mixed cast. And it's funny because it's one of those things where every episode a new character is walking down the street and you're like, well, here's the next gotcha character that they're trying to showcase. And they work for every single one of them. Every single one of them that showed up, I'm like, if this game was literally in my hands right now, I'd be rolling on all these characters because they're all great looking characters. They have great personality and fun characteristics to them.
Is this a browser game?
No, I think it's supposed to be a mobile game.
Because I couldn't get it on the App Store.
No, it's Japan only. So Unless you have like an Android and you download it straight, I guess you could get it, but.
Well, you said you had goofed off with it. I was wondering.
No, I was watching videos of it, like on YouTube. No, I think the funniest of all the characters they kind of showed, besides the fact that we had a vampire that we totally knew was going to be the way it was, is we seen the birth of a new Yandere character. And it was a, you know, it's funny because whenever Yandere characters show up, it's always one of those things of like, is it going to be up there with the levels of all these other ones, like Yunagasai and stuff like that? And this one, I literally, I'm like, yeah, if I ever make another list of best Yandere, this one's going to be in that list because it was Eriko, and she was in this kind of hospital location for this one episode, which was a great, it was two episodes. It was a fantastic two episodes. Had a great ending to it.
They're but, great yeah, this, at healing to 30%.
And it was funny because in our first impressions, I was talking about this character that shows up randomly. She collapses on the street. And Yuki, with his complete obliviousness and lack of being able to figure out anything that's happening around him, just walks up and says, "Are you hungry?" and leaves some food and leaves. And she had like this killer look on her face, like, what the hell? And then it gets to the episode where they actually have her involved with it, and she's got this ring that she's trying to put on Yuki and stuff, and it's like, wow, this is a fantastic new kind of Yandere character. And every time she shows up, he's panicking, running away. it's just a great, great, awesome episode. It's just one of those shows where every episode I thoroughly enjoyed. Now, I admit that Carol starting out was a little bit loud, but I couldn't ignore her because she's a tsundere, so I have my thing for tsunderes anyways. Rima was pretty crazy, too. This is kind of... what are they called?
Alpaca.
Alpaca, yeah. And just would randomly spit, and then she transforms into like this crazy magical girl transformation and kicks butt. Just awesome stuff. Every episode was just absolutely a blast, and I thoroughly enjoyed it from beginning to end. So, yeah, I guess the only kind of, if you want to drag something negative out of me, technically never really kind of addresses this darker backside overarching plot throughout the entire thing. I mean, they technically got a little bit into kind of slowly creeping into who Yuki is and kind of him and his whole shtick with the rest of the girls. But, like, this whole background bad guy the entire time never gets addressed. it's there and it's affecting certain characters. And then it's just like, okay, the show's ended. So... yeah, if you want to drag something out of me, technically the overarching plot line didn't really go anywhere, but at the same time, it was a very minor thing to the rest of the show. The crux of the show was just these misadventures of these characters doing things every episode, introducing new characters, obviously to sell them to the gacha crowd, but it was a really fun ride all the way.
It'll be interesting to see if they can actually do more seasons of this, because If it's just a if they're just softly borrowing storylines from the game itself, I mean they could milk this for seasons on end.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's technically a commercial for its game, and if they see enough kind of people gravitating towards the game, they can obviously say that, okay, well, let's make another season and keep hyping new characters. I wouldn't be opposed to that. And I guess it's technically really great, the fact that I don't have it, because I don't have to worry about, you know, here comes the second season, crap, I might want to roll more characters, because that's pretty much the issue that I have with Fate Grand Order, is like certain characters, like, oh man, that show was great, so now I gotta roll for that character.
Is it a top-down tactical type game, or?
You kind of see the sprite characters in the show. Like, it's kind of like, I don't know, Magia Record, that kind of 2D sprite chibi characters. I mean, like I said, you see them in the transitions for the split between the commercials or whatever they have with the show. So, yeah, a lot of fun. Definitely suggest it. The sisters were great, too. Freaking head butts her and she forgets what was going on. The doting sisters. That would have been great to have more of them, but... Fortunately, it was very late in the show. But yeah, my gem of the season definitely was a huge welcome this last few months. Of course, it's been a rough last few months for most people, and having a show like this kind of brighten up my week every week was much welcomed. And I think if anybody right now is kind of troubling, looking for something to kind of give them a bright side of things, just go watch the show. Hopefully you'll smile and enjoy it as much as we did. So, Princess Connect, Redive. Definitely check it out. Moving forward, Gleipnir. This one was streaming on Funimation, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Pine Jam. This one was based off of manga. The genres are action, mystery, supernatural, ecchi, and seinen. The director was Kazuhiro Yonada, who did Yonada the Dawn and Cool-Headed Hozuki. And this one follows a boy named Shuichi. It's kind of set in the modern times Japan. At some point, you find out that he has a weird ability. He becomes a monster. Or he calls it a monster, a bakemono. Basically, he transforms into what would be like a baseball mascot, big dog character with a huge revolver, which technically is not typical for a mascot. The plushie himself is a mascot character, but he also has a gun. But he's like empty inside. He's got this big old zipper on his back. And at some point, he rescues a girl named Claire, who was in a burning building out in the middle of nowhere on the side of the mountain. And almost does something to her and forgets his phone and runs off. And then she finds him the next day, knows that it's him, that he's the one that changed into that, and kind of blackmails him into helping her. She's trying to find her sister who killed her parents. And there's something to do with these coins. You come to find out later that people that find these coins randomly throughout the area can take them to this guy who identifies himself as an alien. And you can put the coins into this vending machine and get your wish granted to you. And everybody's kind of turns into this big old thing where everybody's fighting to gather the coins, get 100 of them so they can get their ultimate wish granted to them. So have a battle royale-esque type thing with a little bit of character backstories kind of intermingling between the characters throughout the entire series. So your thoughts, Chris, on Gleipnir?
This one is kind of a difficult one for me to kind of quantify because I actually liked it a lot more than I realized or than I thought I would. Mostly because it has this very dark feel, but to me, it never really got as dark as I thought it could be. And I'm actually very surprised at that. And it does have this kind of weird dark undertone to everything that it does. I don't know, because there is some aspects that I thought did feel a little bit more heavy than it should. But it does have this really interesting kind of weird world that it's trying to convey. Like Andrew was mentioning, the alien wants the coins and everybody's out getting these stupid coins. And then battles ensue involved in that. And then, yeah, it does get gory here and there, but it's not bad gory. It's just blood splurting here and there, and then kind of mass poisoning of... Never mind, I don't like it. Okay. No, I honestly was surprised at how much I enjoyed the show when going through it. But when it comes down to it, it is a dark show, and I liked it because it was a good action-y type show. That's about it.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. I think the most interesting thing, because like I mentioned, each one of these people that get these coins and bring them to this guy, they essentially, it's never kind of mentioned that they all have like a power bestowed upon them, which is never technically explained. I think that was the only thing that I never really got a clear answer on. Like when somebody walks up to him and says something, they kind of get abilities from. And it doesn't seem like they ever choose what abilities to get, because they have one guy that literally gets a freaking telescope put on his head. And that's his ability, is he has a freaking telescope on his head that he can record things. So obviously I doubt that he wanted that, but maybe he did. Maybe he was just looking at peeping people. But with the guy, the cake with Suichi, I mean, he of course, technically for story reasons, he doesn't know why he was made into a big, huge mascot character. And then there's other characters that are, you know, there's one guy that's this big, huge, buff thing with blade arms. There's one guy that turns into a huge centipede thing. So it's not like there's like a set, like, I want to be a centipede thing. So it's I guess that's the only thing that really kind of, it troubled me, is it seemed like everybody's abilities they got when they first brought a coin is different. And so
It seems like one of those kind of wish granted based on the wish, but it's not actually the best part of it. Like, they had one guy who said he wanted, he was the fastest ever. So he was probably granted a wish of, I want to be fast or something like that. I do know that, didn't they say that the first girl that they fought, didn't she say that she wanted to be a racer or something like that? So it seems like it's loosely based around the wish, but not necessarily the wish is going to be necessarily good.
Right. And I guess that's the thing is, like, it's interpretation there, or maybe I just missed it at some point. But what I did like was that with the case with Suichi, it's really interesting because it's technically the gimmick of the show itself is it's kind of facilitates this idea of having a two-person kind of combination. So with Suichi, he has this zipper on his back, and Claire will unzip it, climb inside of it. She gets inside of the mascot, quote-unquote, which is him, and she's able to either control him, or if they can get, you know, in sync enough with their thought process, they can become even stronger, which they never really got to that point, and I can totally see that being a thing with the actual show, because at some point, and this is kind of very light spoiler, somebody else gets inside of Suichi, and they almost become better in sync. And it was a really cool moment to see that, you know, what possibilities this kind of mechanic that the creator created could possibly do in the future. But unfortunately, with these 13 episodes, we don't really get to see too much of it. So it does give me a lot of hope for the future of it. And I guess that's to its detriment, is that a lot of the stuff that really piqued my interest for the story itself was all kind of bottled up at the very end of the 13 episodes, and it kind of leads itself to that idea of, okay, here was an introduction, here's where things are going to start getting really crazy for the characters, emotionally, really get inside the minds of these characters at the very end, and then we'll see you in the manga. Hopefully, they get announced a second season, because I think that's where the story itself is going to really take off, because everything before this has kind of just been very light with the characters. Suichi is very blank. I got kind of frustrated with Suichi because there was times where he'd go through some crazy stuff. They would kind of give him that, oh, now he's a bad kid and he's been through stuff. And then he would go right back to being a wine bag.
Yeah, that was kind of annoying.
He kind of had that whole roller coaster to, you know, Shinji mode to, you know, hardened criminal mode and then back to Shinji mode that kind of frustrated me. Whereas Claire was kind of, you know, Claire was consistent with her character, and I really did like her character for that. So I have my issues with the main characters. A lot of the side characters are really pretty good, but yeah, I guess the other kind of nice thing is that the action scenes were great. It's funny enough is I really like Shuichi's mascot character mode. Like he when he gets really angry and the teeth are coming out, it looks really cool. I really do like it. And to see him kind of fight, there was another later fight again that I won't really get into because it kind of is spoiler. It even was more fantastic. I really did like that. So it's got a lot going for it. And the characters have the setup. Again, a little bit too late in the series for it to really get into them. But I kind of came for the, you know, the typical kind of action horror. Got a little frustrated by the Shinji roller coaster ride with Shuichi. And then kind of got in some really cool stuff in the later parts before kind of being cut off at the end. Now, I will say, despite the later segments with the backstories kind of piquing my interest to the overall story, I was very, I don't know if it was rushed or just really bad writing, but there was a lot of kind of facepalm, so that's the conclusion you came to kind of stuff.
There
was a certain character in the backstory who was making a lot of really stupid decisions, and just bad writing.
That one, I in no way, shape, or form, I think I get yelled at it. In some cases I get it, and in other cases I don't. It's like, that one was kind of almost like, I think that you probably needed more time to work with that one, because that didn't make a lot of sense. It was like, if I was to kind of make this conclusion, maybe I could kind of follow the mind frame, but no, I didn't. It didn't work in that particular case. So
it was funny because there was literally two like pinnacle points that he makes a decision. This guy in the past, and in I don't know if I did it in the second one, but I did. I think I did both of them. Like right when the decision was made, I said, "So that's the conclusion you came to." And then the second decision, I'm like, "That's the conclusion you okay? That's the conclusion you came to." Sure. Edgy boy. All right, edgy boy. It was very frustrating. But at the same time, his character and the connection he has with the other character with him, that's what has my interest, and I'm very intrigued by it. And that was all, again, a lot of encompassing a backstory with certain main characters, and it was stuff that was really kind of finally giving another dimension to these characters that didn't really have any dimension to them for the past, you know, eight or so episodes. So it was a really kind of one of those, finally, I got the nugget that I want. This is what I wanted. So it's kind of one of those, it's a slow burn at the beginning. A lot of it's going to be, the earlier episode is going to be based on your enjoyment of just that kind of mechanic of writing the other character and the battles they fight with the other characters, the mystery, the waiting for that mystery to be revealed is going to be what holds you.
It is frustrating because a lot of the action scenes are awesome payoffs. However, in a lot of cases, it feels like it kind of grinds its wheels here and there. And it's usually, you'll really notice it when they get into the quote unquote forest, and you will see there is huge, vast amounts of time where they're just discussing what they're going to do. And it does feel like it gets kind of stuck in the mud for a little while at some points.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. So, but the thing that I did enjoy most about the show was that it was the first case that Chris had a show where people do die. I mean, there is the threat here with this show. But Freckles had plot armor.
I was wondering what the heck what that was, the comment up there was for. Yes, I was in the safe because Freckles was
Claire has Freckles, and I don't know when it finally dawned on me. I was like, I think it was maybe like four or so episodes into it. I'm like, wow, it technically is a show that Freckles shouldn't die. I mean, she technically is the main heroine, and I mean, she could die.
And the silly thing is I like the puppy girl a lot better than Claire, but I do like Claire. It was great. Yeah, there is one thing I do
puppy
like.
Puppy girl was way cool. The puppy girl segment was really cool. it's funny because there's a lot of shows. And this is one of those things where it's like a detriment thing. There's a lot of shows that you have these moments where that kind of gruesomeness, because like early on in the show, I mean, literally within the first two episodes, you have like your first like, wait, did they just kill that person? Okay, wow, this is going to get really heavy. And again, back to that whole Shinji back and forth thing where it's like, they don't care no more. But there's a lot of shows where it gets really kind of brutal, and I'm okay with it. But I hate it because I internally go, crap, now is Chris not going to want to watch this show anymore? And this is a show where something really kind of screwed up happened with one of the characters. And I was like, I'm mad. And something really cool came out of it. And I was totally blown away. So it was a show that had a moment in it where it kind of bait and switched. And I really liked it. That's all I'm going to say because I don't want to spoil things. All
right. You're going to have to tell me later. So,
is one. Look at the side. They're in the Nick Rinder crazy thing.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is. Whoa, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that was a pretty rough scene. I was really close.
It'd be like one of those things that he walks out the door, and I'm like a few minutes later, it goes, wait, Chris, come back in. You're gonna like this. You're really gonna like this.
But no, it's one of those shows that it should not have worked for me. It really shouldn't have. And if you have less tolerance for brutal scenes, you probably won't like this. But if you have about my tolerance, or even more like Andrew's tolerance, you're probably going to like this show. There is a lot in this show to keep you wanting to come back and see what's going on, because it's got this power. It's not a kind of power level ish, but you do sense, okay, this character, you can sense the power dynamics in a lot of these characters. It's really funny, because I can absolutely see the reason why what happened with Shuinichi, like Andrew was talking about, where the main character can't quite synchronize, and yet another character could. And it all has to do with kind of psychology and all that stuff. You can see all kinds of crazy stuff in here if you're willing to look for it. It's a really well thought out show, from what I can tell so far.
I guess except
for one particular situation, which we still haven't figured that one out.
It is nice that there is a difference between a show that's kind of being, I guess, cruel to the viewer, and then there's the idea of a show that's kind of not. It's a difference between really kind of waddling in despair and torture of characters, and kind of not being as abusive to the viewer. And so there's that kind of fine line between when it's showing something kind of tragic happening, but not sitting there and just kind of showing it over and over, torturing somebody to death, versus just kind of a shot. And I think this is one of those shows that kind of stays in that very close to the just not waddling in it, not dragging out those scenes. Even though, again, there is parts where it's like, well, that was screwed up. That happened. But it doesn't sit there and spend 5 minutes having a character choke on something. So, yeah. But there are some nasty characters in there. But they of course, get their dues. Ikiuchi was really annoying, though. Telescope guy. It's like, every time he popped up, it's like, dude, seriously, somebody kill him already. Somebody just kill him already. Just have his head pop off. We know that can happen. But yeah, that's Glepner. I guess the biggest negative I'm going to give it is the fact that, unless it has a second season, this is one of those ones where it kind of just...
This is true.
It kind of unpacked a lot of stuff at the end, and it definitely does its job of saying, this is where things start to really get interesting, and it's unfortunate if they don't have a second season coming, so we'll see. I don't know if there's any listings for another...
I think it's on Viz, so it's not like we don't have access to it.
Yeah, but I want to watch it animated, because I want to watch the animated doggy flying around and shooting things.
I agree.
The animated doggy's funner than the manga.
I agree.
But no, I did technically read, I would probably say it was, because I watched the first kill. That's why I was saying it didn't make any sense why this was set up as like a comedy and stuff, because I had read up to the point where they had that first kill. And so that was the thing I was talking about in the preview. I was like, why is this a comedy? This isn't a funny show. And it wasn't really a funny show. I mean, there was maybe a couple of little punchlines here and there.
Well, but it wasn't etchy, the focus. Even etchy, you could loosely call it etchy, just because one of the main characters loves to walk around in her underwear. So
yeah, I mean, she always gets inside of Zuichi without her clothes on. It was their thing. So that was... But I understood why the etchy was there.
Yeah, only because you have to kind of call it that. But it's technically not etchy, per se. It's not teasing in any way.
It's just pervy.
Yeah.
Because they show plenty of shots of it, and they get really close to her butt all the time.
Yeah, so they did.
It's not like they were shying away from it. Yeah, that's Glepner. Check that
it's,
out.
It's one of those weird things. Maybe we should discuss that at some point. Is like what is constituting etchy?
It's anything. I guess. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we've done it in our fan service discussion. I don't know. Shironeko Project Zero Chronicles, our next one. This one was streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes. The studio was Project Number 9. The source is a game, and the genres are action, adventure, fantasy, and magic. And this one takes place in kind of a setting where you have the people of the darkness realm, which is kind of down underneath the clouds, very dark and grim, full of monsters, kind of overthrowing things. And it's all led by the King of Darkness. And the people there are kind of suffering. You kind of quickly meet a boy who's in a village, and the village gets overrun by monsters. And it seems to be a common occurrence in that area because the King of Darkness doesn't do anything to protect his people. And then you have, again, the area above the clouds. There's this floating island where the people of the light live. And they're all kind of headed up by a girl named Idis. And Idis is pretty much like the Princess of Light, as you can probably imagine. And she kind of fights off the demons that come and attack them. And they all live very peacefully up there for the most part, besides whenever the people from the Realm of Darkness come up and attack them. And so you kind of have a story where you have this boy who was from this village that got ravaged, who desires to become the next King of Darkness and kind of fix the wrongs of the Realm of Darkness by protecting its people, whereas the king's not doing that currently. And his kind of interactions with Idis of the other side, where people were a little more peacefully, and the battle between the two realms and wanting to put a stop to that. Your thoughts? It was funny because we made a lot of jokes in our preview about how this show was nothing like, well, that we made jokes in the first impressions that the preview synopsis, what we did, had nothing to do with the show that we watched the first four episodes of. And we found out at the very end, it's because I think it was a prequel story to the actual mobile phone app story, which was something completely different.
Yeah, it definitely, and it's so funny because I think we made, either me or Andrew made the joke that this was a Romeo and Juliet story, and oh my gosh, talk about playing out all the tropes involved in it. And it's funny because it is a cute story, and it does have fun with it, and it just does this kind of it's an interesting take on it, and it does it really well. It doesn't look all that great. Some of the character artwork I like, but as far as the overall visuals of this show, it wasn't all that great. And a lot of the background characters do get lost in themselves. And especially when you start noticing characters that aren't quite obviously main character material, and they just get lost really quickly. But it's a show that you kind of just sit back and just watch it for the fun of it. It's not really going to do anything amazing. Like I said, it's basically Romeo and Juliet, but it's kind of a their version of it per se. And I liked it for what it was.
Yeah, Romeo and Juliet, if one side was angels and one side was demons and they were fighting each other in a war. Yeah, it's odd because we were pretty...
Right down to the Tybalt harsh character.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Everything was in there.
Didn't even think about that. Wow. Of course, I'm not a huge... I mean, I'm not saying that you're a huge Romeo and Juliet fan, but I've never been a fan of Romeo and Juliet story at all. So even that reference makes sense to me. It's funny because I know in our first impressions, we were pretty harsh on this show because it just didn't look great. It had this whole, like the first episode was just a blah of just kind of rushing through things. We were joking about like, here's a village, now he's digging a hole, and now this guy shows up, and he wants to duel him, and he's like, you're going to become the next Demon King thing, and it's like, okay, now I'm going to go become the Demon King person. It felt very kind of rushed, and like, he's on an escalator that's just going by all the plot lines, and he's just going, yes, 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 yes. And it is odd, because, yeah, besides, like, there's like a middle two episodes where they were obviously trying to kind of make everybody become buddy-buddy before the big thing happens, because you know there's obviously going to be this big clashing of the two sides at some point. It just has to happen. And so I understood why those two episodes were there, but the chemistry sucked between these characters, and there just was no writing there to make it interesting. Like, you do have like a picnic kind of thing happening, and the writing just wasn't there to make it at all entertaining, even though you know why the picnic thing is happening. Unless you have good character chemistry or a writer to make like some interactions that's going to capture you and be interesting, it turns into a very blah two episodes. But overall, it's like it's a I guess it was just kind of the... I don't know why, but it was kind of something I wanted to watch all the way through it. I don't know if it was because I was wanting to see if it was going to play out the Romeo and Juliet thing. If there was something interesting in this whole warring side thing. I usually like the whole concept of behind enemy line kind of thing. Like, getting into the capital of the other side and kind of realizing that the two sides are actually the same. Like, we're both, you know, the both quote-unquote, the both human kind of thing. We're both human. We do enjoy things the same. We're not at all that different as the war would lead you to believe. We can find peace because we are technically looking for the same thing. And I don't know if it was that was kind of capturing me and wanting me to watch all the way to the end of it.
It did seem like I was really interested to see how they could explain the whole nobody can go against the King of Darkness. That part was one of the things that
didn't really do anything with that.
Huh?
Just nothing really done with that at all.
No, and that was kind of frustrating. But yeah, it was one of those things that...
Glad you didn't get what you were looking for, Chris. Sorry.
It's one of those things that you, if you're sitting there right in front of the... And you're trying to create this peace, and you're obviously... These people think that everybody in the Kingdom of Darkness is evil, and you have somebody sitting there going, look, you don't understand. Nobody can go against this one person. Obviously, that one person is the problem.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, is it's like, it obviously set up the factions. It obviously set the behind enemy line things, the acknowledgement that we're technically the same, we're looking for the same thing. It set that up properly. It, again, didn't really execute the whole picnic thing all that well. And I guess the draw was that to, you know, eventually see that point where, yeah, is he going to rise up against the King of Darkness? How is he going to do that? And it didn't really do what I thought it was going to do, and I was kind of a little bit displeased by that, but at the same time, it kind of surprised me how it ended, because I really wasn't seeing that coming.
I was a little bit disappointed in the...
It makes sense to the grander scheme of things that this is technically a prequel story.
I don't think it had time to... And now, granted, I don't know that I wanted to see this writing for 24 episodes, but...
Oh, gosh.
I don't feel like...
You would have 5 episodes of the picnic.
I don't feel like it had
enough time. And a beach episode.
I don't feel like it had enough time to breathe at all. It felt like it was trying so hard to get all this out in one shot, and it felt like it did a lot of cutting of a lot of probably really solid scenes. I mean... having the main character, if you want to call him that, the main character up against the King of Darkness at some point would have probably been an interesting aspect to have in there. Not just kind of hold him back so that he can't actually do anything until the last minute. So there was a lot of things that should have probably been in here. But, hey, it is what it is. It was good for what it tried to do.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because even with the ending the way that it was, it's technically something that I usually support. Like, if the writer wants to have everybody come together and have friendship power wins the win, I'm for it. If the writer wants to have, you know, suddenly out of nowhere, he offers tea to the King of Darkness, and the King of Darkness says, you know, you're a good boy. Here, have the crown. I'm for it. If he wants to have the entire world end, I mean, that if the writer wants to do something, I'm all for that. I guess the main reason why it feels like, even again, I wasn't really expecting anything from the show, and so what I got was technically more than what I was bargaining for to begin with, is I think it just felt like it tried to have such a huge and grandiose story with two very huge, you know, kingdoms converging against each other and having everything kind of weighed on these one, you know, 4 or 5 characters. And it never really did enough with those grandiose viewpoints. Like, you have this very big perspective of this big kingdom, these two big kingdoms, and yet the story felt very small in the end. It felt like a very small walk down a street where you have the possibility of, I don't know, hang gliding through the entire story, just showing more aspects of this world than just a picnic in a forest. So I guess that's probably why it felt disappointing in the end, even though I didn't have expectations for it, is that I seen potential there. Like, there was potential there. The world looked fascinating. The mechanics was fascinating. I liked the element of light and darkness. Everything was set up perfectly to do a really good story. Maybe that's what is in the actual, you know, mobile game with the story in that one, since, again, this feels like the prequel story to it. Maybe that's when it's going to get a lot more opened up, but with this one being, again, in 12 episodes, I just don't think it really had enough time and kind of direction to really do something good with all the mechanics and world that it had to itself, so... But yeah, not a terrible show. Fantastic outro. That's why I watched it. I like the outro. It's a good outro. Well, yeah. I don't know. No, I have BNA as the outro. Maybe I'll do it in here anyways. It's a good outro. But yeah, that's Shioneko Project Zero Chronicles. It is technically a story that has a beginning and end, which is nice. It's just it technically has a tease to the fact that it is technically a prequel of this universe to another story. So, there you go. Shioneko Project Zero Chronicles. Check that out if that seems interesting to you. Moving on, we have the second season of Kaguya-sama Love is War, or Kaguya-sama wa Kokurasetai Tensai Tachi no Renai Zunosun. This one is streaming on Funimation. The episodes is 12 episodes. Studio is A1 Pictures. The source is manga. And the genres are comedy, psychological, romance, school, and seinen. I just realized this. I'm like, psychological? Oh, okay, never mind. Psychological, because it's always in their heads. yeah. That's, yeah, so for those that don't know what Kaguya-sama Love is War, possibly you missed us ranting and raving about it with our first season impressions of it. And our debates for the best of its, what was it, last year? It's 2019. We gave it a lot of high praise, but for those that missed all that, it essentially takes place in a very kind of prestige school where a lot of kind of, you know, high-class people, their children go to that school, very rich people, people of, you know, political holdings and stuff like that all go there. And we follow basically two characters. One is Shinomiya, who is Kaguya. Her family owns, like, a lot of, you know, big, what was it, like, market chains and stuff like that, chain stores, something like that.
Yeah,
they sell a lot of money.
She's the inheritor of a huge, massive corporation.
Yeah, right. And Shirogane, who essentially got in there through his merits. He doesn't really, his family's very poor. He works very hard to get the position that he could just to get in there. And Shirogane is the student council president, and Shinomiya is the vice president of the student council. And then they're kind of joined with their other members, Ishigami, who's kind of the financial person, Fujiwara, who is kind of the secretary,
I think.
And they all work in the student council, and just kind of shenanigans happens. Mm-hmm. The big kind of shtick for this entire series overall is that Shinomiya loves Shirogane, and Shirogane loves Shinomiya, but their pride doesn't allow them to confess. They want to get the other person to confess to them instead, so that they don't look like they're, you know, beneath the other person, because there's obviously pride aspects involved in that world. So, yeah, that's basically the gist. And then you have, again, Fujiwara, who's kind of more bubbly character, kind of throwing a wrench in a lot of things. Ishigami's more the character of, like, very depressing, sees, like, the negative of everything, thinks that Shinomiya wants to kill him. And with this particular season, we get the introduction of Ino, who is a girl that is seeking to dethrone them and become the next student council president, because we're going into a new year with this particular one. And typically, whenever they become, you know, their third year, they would give up becoming student council president so they can focus on the finals and everything like that. So kind of the usual shenanigans happens, and they technically do go to become the third year's student council presidents, and Ino is their competitor for it. So, yeah. Your thoughts on season two?
I'm gonna let everybody who's listening take a wild guess as to whether or not we loved this show again this season. Oh, that was a hard one, right? Yes, loved it. I loved this season. There was a couple of, surprisingly enough, there was a couple of off spots in this show, and it's
I wonder if it's the same I'm thinking of.
The first episode, I was absolutely terrified that this show wasn't going to, but they pulled it together, and it was like, oh, here's my show. So yeah, there was an episode or two later on that didn't quite hit. In particular, there was a kind of a flashback-y type episode.
Yeah, Ishigami's backstory stuff was like, wow, this is like really heavy. What show are we watching? Like, it just feels very out of place.
It does.
Like, I liked the story, but at the same time, it's like, but we don't do this. Where is this coming from?
And to say that's a bad thing to this show, it just didn't feel like Andrew was saying. It was way out of place, and so to give it a knock for that, I guess I kind of have to, because it like we said, it doesn't feel like it fits in the show. It's good. It just doesn't feel like it fits in the show. But other than those couple points, it just was a wonderful show. Just more, especially with the addition of, she was absolutely just walking in on the most absurd points of all of the jokes that you get. You get all the jokes that you get from the first season, but from the perspective of somebody who's walking in on these scenes. And it's like absolutely phenomenal adding to that. Of course, Fujiwara adding more and more hijinks to the entire situations. I loved it. I can't say enough, especially adding in the kind of weird thing involved in the new thing that Ishigami is trying, aside from his backstory. What he was trying to do was kind of a weird thing, and that was kind of fun to explore for a little while. So yeah, I loved it. I can't suggest it enough. Still, wonderful show.
Yeah, that's the thing, because it's like, I don't, unless I'm complete, I mean, technically, the only thing that I really felt like it was not being a typical comedy with the first season was just those later episodes where you had, like, the whole thing with Shinomiya wanting to go to the fireworks with Shirogane, and them kind of having a wrench thrown in their whole plans, and the whole situation with Shirogane grabbing her and everything like that. And that was the only part where it was kind of felt like it was just going, okay, we're no longer a comedy, now we are a drama, a romance drama. Let's focus on romance drama and completely take the comedy out of the picture. And of course, like right after that whole segment, it turns right back into comedy. And that's the same with Ishigami's whole story, but it just like, it's one of those things where it felt very out of place, even though, again, I thought it was a good story. And I did like finally getting a little bit more insight into his mentality and what he's going through.
It was one of those things that they kept kind of dropping in there here and there. And it was like, what the heck are they doing with his backstory? What is going on? And then finally, we just got the backstory.
Yeah, you're not allowed to be happy. You're not allowed to be happy. What the hell is going on? Did he kill somebody? Again, we're going back to the whole, you know, school sports show. Somebody had to have killed somebody. Yeah. And it had a really good ending to it, though. That's the thing. It's like it's almost like my arguments about A Sentence of a Bookworm, where it's like, why are we going this direction? I don't know, but you're doing a really awesome job, so I can't say anything. And yeah, it nails the ending. And of course, technically, with Shinomiya and her whole the picture episode was, again, technically another one that was very kind of heavy drama and not so much comedy, that had a absolutely spectacular ending to it. So there was technically two, I won't say like episodes, because they do technically kind of split each episode into like three or four skits. And they both, I guess with Shinomiya 1, it technically was like one segment, whereas Ishigami was like three, I think. They do have great stories to them. They do have fantastic punchlines at the end of them, not joke punchlines, but like conclusions. But it doesn't take away from the fact that everything else is still the usual kind of Kaguya-sama Love is War type stuff. Great, fantastic narration going over it, talking about what's happening with each one of them and who's winning in the end, who's losing in the end. All that stuff is still phenomenally well done. It's still keeping the same style to it, same great characters. All that stuff is still, you know, top-notch, and I really do love it.
I did come away from this particular season liking Ishigami a lot, if that says anything, because he absolutely, I'm not going to say he shined, because it's still the main characters absolutely were phenomenal.
Just makes you want to ship the heck out of Ishigami and Ino. That's obviously what that point was. That was really cute. I love that whole kind of perspective from the Ino's friend, where it's kind of showing you, wow, these people technically, they're both kind of the same. They both don't like injustice being done to people and the illogicness of life being accepted. So it was really cute. Now, Ino was definitely my Sengoku of this particular artist. She definitely captured that kind of that same style. She was adorable. I love the whole picture episode and her pulling Shinomiya over to them taking the picture. Really, really great cast as always. Really do enjoy them. I love the moon gazing episode with basically Shiragane breaking the hell out of Shinomiya. Of course, that was a lot of that this season. That was a lot of
Shiragane breaking this season.
So much that she had to go see the
doctor.
To bring in the most prestigious doctor of all of like Japan just to come. I think they flew him in from somewhere else, probably the United States, just to check her heart because there's obviously something doki doki wrong with her. And then
he's a crackpot the second that he mentions what it might actually be.
Yeah, it's like, no, this is obviously wrong. It's got to be some, maybe it's a stroke. I don't know. that was really great. Her meeting the dad was great too. Enjoy that. The whole shoujo perspective from Shinomiya was fantastic too. Like so many man grunts, and Ishigami looking all like straight out of a shoujo too is kind of funny as well. Completely changed his art style and everything. That was good.
Wasn't there something to do with his eyes this season too? He got some sleep. Got some sleep, and he didn't look as tired, and this totally messed her up.
Everybody liked him. Shinomiya didn't. She likes that rough, tired self of him, which is pretty bad, which it totally gets into. It's like it fully acknowledges all that. Like, am I wrong for liking this? It was great. The elections was great. I kind of liked how they ended that one too.
I think they did wonderful with that. There was but see, that's what we were saying is they pull off some really cool character moments that even in the midst of all these hijinks, you get these really cool character moments. Like I said, I came away really, really liking Ishigami. They pulled off a really cool scene with Shiragane and Ino, which absolutely compounded how much I already like Shiragane. So
Hayasaka date with Shiragane in the season? It was, wasn't it? That was great.
Yeah,
that was great. That was really great. Totally broke her too. No, I think my favorite of this entire season though is the usual Fujiwara getting dragged into teaching Shiragane something. Because we had like the whole volleyball thing with the first season, and then it was volleyball. Yeah, it was volleyball. And then it was like now it's singing, and they had like this whole moment with her like breaking down in front of everybody, and just like fantastic animation for it. That was really great.
So you can teach him to dance better than me.
Oh, yeah. The net pulling dance. No, it's the only negative I'll give this season. And it technically tried to fix it. Like it didn't do something it did in the first season that was fantastic, and it tried to fix it, and it didn't quite get there. Was the first season had like the most fantastic ED of all time, and it was Fujiwara dancing in the student council president room, and it was an ED that they threw in there, and it was fantastically animated. And they never did that with an ED in this entire season. But they tried to do a dance, and they did it with Shinomiya. And it was fantastic, but it wasn't long enough, and it wasn't the same caliber, but it was still great. It was also one of those cool things where the intro has this whole segment where she touches her cheek, and then you find out at that point, oh, that's what she was doing. I like that. But yeah, it wasn't as cool the dance as Fujiwara's. Fujiwara still beats Shinomi on that in that category for dancing. Sorry. Just is. So yeah, I think we've killed that one. I did like the fact that they had, I mean, they technically do a lot of references, but I did get a kick out of the fact they did a Charlie Brown reference. And it was cool because at the time I noticed it, but I didn't really want to say it. It was like after the scene that I'm like, that was a Monogatari reference, wasn't that?
We both kind of caught that one.
And then like a couple, like maybe a day later, I seen somebody posted on Twitter doing a side-by-side comparison. I'm like, yep, called that one. They did like a shot-for-shot comparison with the scene of in Bakemonogatari Monogatari with Adadagi and Tsubasa. So that was cool. That's Kaguya-sama Love is War Season 2. Still a fantastic series. Want more, as always. hopefully there's more content to keep going. We'll see. Hopefully. Please. Moving on, we have BNA, Brand New Animal. This one is streamed on Netflix. I don't know why I have Crunchyroll on there. It definitely wasn't on Crunchyroll. It streamed on Netflix, ran for 12 episodes. Done by Studio Trigger. I don't know why I have 0G. And apparently, I didn't update anything on this layout. It's done by Trigger. The genres are action, comedy. That's not right either. Etchy. That's not etchy. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. So, Studio Trigger. The source is the original. The director was Yoshinari, who did...
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that little... Pretty sure wherever I got this from. I think I got this from Sugusugu Momo, so I'm pretty sure that Yoshinari did not do Sugusugu Momo. He did Little Watch Academia and Gurren Lagann Parallel Works. The series and script writing was done by Kazuki Nakashima, who did Kill la Kill, and Promare, and Gurren Lagann. So... Good people there. Usually they're typical people. They kind of keep it pretty tight in Studio Trigger. So you don't really get different directors and stuff working on things most of the time. But yeah, this one takes place in a kind of a modern setting. But the big difference between our world and the world of BNA is that mankind has been living alongside the beast people, or beastmen, for a long time. They kind of show really, you know, little snippets of, you know, wall paintings of, like, you know, the usual glyphics on the walls in Egypt with the cat people and the dog people and all that kind of stuff, and kind of tying it in with that. But we get a really quick picture because it starts off right off the bat with the main character, Michiru, who is being chased by, or not being chased by, but she hides in a kind of a vent when some people come by and they spray some paint on some poster that's on the wall. It kind of is talking about, you know, equal rights with beastmen and humans kind of coming together and getting rid of the hatred. That this world does not... there's a lot of discrimination against beastmen. And Michiru, we come to find out really quickly, is that she used to be a human, and at some point she turned into a beastman, namely a tanuki, even though she does not want to be a tanuki, she wants to be a squirrel. And she quickly flees, grabs all the money that she can. She flees to a island, which is called Anima City. And at Anima City is apparently a place created, by a group that is a kind of a place where beastmen can come and be safe. And that's where they can live together and be who they are. And so she, you know, tries to flee there. She's hunted the entire way by a group of people, very viciously hunted. And thankfully finds another beast man that helps her, named Mary, and rides a boat to Anima City where she can live as a beast man and not be afraid of being hunted down by humans. And while she's there, she's trying to find a way to cure it. She calls it a disease, a beast man disease, and she needs to get rid of it so she can turn back into a human and go back home to be with her family. And, yeah, kind of exploring the Anima City, how it's kind of built, the people within it. She quickly joins the Beastman Co-op, which is a place that kind of helps with different situations in the city for Beastman. And she works alongside Shiro Ogami, who is a wolfman. And he's got like a really insane good scent of smell that he can actually kind of kind of fill out a crime scene and find out what happened using his scent alone, so, or his smell alone. So yeah, your thoughts on VNA, brand new animal.
I really, really did love this show. It looks great. I love the character artwork. I love the kind of stylized, goofy things that are going on in this story. I mean, it had a really cool, interesting feel to it all the way through. It had this just under light feel to it, where it had this kind of fun vibe, especially with Michiru and Ogami, and how they kind of got into it a lot of times, and how they're exploring this world, and kind of that as they're going through it, you can just see these little drops of kind of dark undertones, and finally when everything starts to get revealed, it does just kind of have this, okay, yes, this is something that's interesting to kind of think about, of how do you deal with the kind of who is the real bad guy, and why are the real bad guys doing what they're doing, and is this something that you can judge the entire entirety of humanity or the entirety of beastmen for whatever reason? So it does kind of do that as far as a kind of undertone for what it's trying to do, and I really liked it. It does kind of delve on this lighthearted, keep things keep doing things that are going to keep furthering yourself. Don't get bogged down in the bad side of everything. So yeah, it's a very lighthearted in a lot of that stuff. So I really, really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun watching the show. I found it very uplifting in a lot of cases.
You know, it's funny because like when it first starts out, it's very kind of like, wow, so the humans are the bad people in this world. Humans bad. Everybody else is good. And then like you get to the Anima City and then really quick, you're like, never mind. Technically the beast people are bad too. So it is technically one of those ones that is kind of, it opens up very much on the kind of note of discrimination. Obviously, you know, hunting down beastmen in the street seems very kind of dark and shows this really bad side of kind of discrimination against another race. And then it kind of really kind of rides that. It quickly shifts to kind of riding the gray area between. Like, it's going, this is obviously both sides has its bad apples. And is it really going to make a statement on, you know, what is right and what is wrong in the end? And it does kind of turn that whole acceptance of what you are and almost that element of, you know, she's technically a human, and obviously, even though Ogami does not like any humans, he just, you know, detests them. The smell of a human on somebody sets him off really quickly. Even though he doesn't believe that she was once a human, he kind of realizes very quickly that, you know, if you enjoy being with this person, around this person, obviously not all humans are bad. And so it does kind of push in that idea of, you know, technically not one side is bad in the end. So I did kind of like that whole aspect in the storytelling. But at the same time, I don't really ever feel like it was really kind of trying to pound it into my head, this idea of, you know, which one do you think is the good side? Which one do you think was the bad side? It never really kind of does that. It does kind of feel like it pulls you into the world and kind of just shows you what's happening in this world, rather than kind of, I guess, be preachy about the whole subject, because it technically is a very, very touchy subject to really get into, is this idea of discrimination just for what you are.
Well, even at that, it flat out, if you do decide that such and such group is the bad guys, it'll flat out throw it in your face. No, it's not. And you're, if so, don't expect that your observations are going to be true all the way through the show.
Yeah. But aside than that, let's putting that aside. I did enjoy this show. It was very fun. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I just really like Michiru. She's a lot of fun. Just her exploring this world was a lot of fun, even though it technically wasn't always great stuff. I mean, getting into human trafficking and stuff like that, it does kind of, again, kind of drag it back to the heavier side. But being Trigger, they always kind of quickly shift it back to being kind of, or, you know, fantastical and goofy and just over the top. Which I think is the only thing that I really kind of... I think the only reason why it never really felt heavy to me, for the most part, being, again, it's dealing with technically discrimination and two races and kind of being at odds with each other, is that over-the-topness. Like, really early on, Ogami is trying to take down these three beast men that were working for humans. And he's just, you know, it's just going crazy. Stuff's flying everywhere. The animation's going crazy over the top. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, this is Trigger. That's right. And then it would kind of draw it back again and get, you know, drown into the standard play and taking the characters to the next location. And then it would go crazy over the top of the animation again. So that's probably why it doesn't ever kind of feel very grounded and over realistic. It's just because Trigger likes to be Trigger. They like to be over the top, which is something I've never really enjoyed about Trigger. But thankfully, it doesn't do it too often. I think there was probably like three or four fight scenes where it's like, okay, have fun, Trigger, I guess. Be Trigger and just blow up everything in the Northern Hemisphere with your attacks and stuff. Oh, wait, never mind. You didn't blow up everything. Apparently, you just knocked out a couple people in the end. I don't know how that happened, but okay. again, that's something I never enjoyed about Trigger, but I think it kept it to a minimum, which I did appreciate. Love a lot of the character designs, a lot of fun with the characters. I think the only part that I enjoyed the stuff that happens with Michiru in the situation, but a lot of the whole baseball stuff kind of felt like it was kind of going back in that whole, here's the slum segments of Kill la Kill with what's her face and her family, where the animation and the character design start to kind of go into, you know, very dumbed down mode. And then it would go back into, you know, back in the city away from the slums and everything look a lot more fantastical and, you know, detailed. So that was probably the only side where I was like, wow, these character designs and the artwork just doesn't look very good at all. Jackie and all of them. But the rest of it looked really good. I enjoyed the later segments of it. So, yeah, I liked all the episodes. They had a lot of great, again, besides maybe the baseball stuff. But again, I kind of liked a lot of the later parts of those. And watching Michiru throw a ball like crazy was awesome. I like the mechanics of Michiru too. I mean, I don't want to get into the specifics of it, but just the stuff that she finds out about herself in the later parts, I thought was a lot of fun. It just added another element to the world itself and what she can do in each fight and what they're currently doing, I guess, is the best way I can put it without spoiling things. Yeah, it was a cool world. Again, doesn't get too heavy with the discrimination stuff, but I think it did enough that it was a good story to utilize it. And I guess the only kind of negative I really would give it was probably be the fact that it was a little bit too predictable. Like every quote unquote plot twist was like, yeah, I've seen that coming. I don't know why you didn't, Michiru. Okay, well, I've seen that coming too. So it was a very predictable storyline. But at the end, that didn't take much from it because it was a fun experience going through all this stuff with Michiru and the supporting cast as well. So, and I didn't like the music all that much too. I know a lot of people like the music, the composer for it, but I just didn't like. I mean, I kind of agree with some people that it technically kind of matches it, but there was a lot of the ambient stuff, like, just where it kind of just starts hamming up the single tone, and it sounded terrible, and it kept using that same tone over and over again every time something quote unquote, you know, suspenseful is coming up, and I didn't like it. So yeah, and that kind of, and it's odd whenever music really stands out that much that I kind of wanted to make note of it, but I didn't like the music too much. But other than that, it was, and besides the ED and the OP was fantastic, but
I was just thinking overall of the main theme. That's about all I noticed, and I liked that. So
yeah,
don't know about the music because I didn't notice it.
It was just, I think it was just really that one where it kind of goes whenever something is important is happening. It's like, oh my gosh, this noise sounds annoying. Why are we playing the same stupid noise every time something, and it does like three times an episode? Like, okay, I get it. That's your something bad's happening tone. We don't have to play it every single time something bad's happening. But yeah, fun characters, fun world. again, besides the fact that it's technically dealing with you know, some heavy themes, doesn't really waddle in it too much, really does kind of show the gray area, you know, the, between the two sides that are obviously have their own issues. Cool little world. Did some cool stuff with it in the end, even though it was a little bit predictable. It did it really well. And it was a fun ride all the way through it. Definitely was entertained thoroughly through. So another Trigger show that Andrew enjoyed. And it's not because I'm a furry. It's just because it's a good show.
That's nobody said you were a furry, Andrew.
Apparently you're a furry if you enjoy it. If you enjoyed DNA and Beastars, you're a furry, apparently.
Well, okay.
Sugimomo.
Can we say projection much?
Bob, maybe. Sugimomo is our next one. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Zero G. This is true this time. The source is a manga. The genres are action, comedy, supernatural, ecchi, school, and seinen. This one follows Kazuya, who is, well, I guess technically, for those that don't know, for the first season, essentially follows a boy named Kazuya. Basically, Kazuya has a Tsukumogami named Kiriha, who basically Tsukumogamis are essentially objects that have kind of taken on a personality and becomes like a spirit, so to speak, like a supernatural being that can interact with them. And anyways, Kiriha is kind of protecting him, and they kind of work together to fight other Tsukumogamis who are essentially when people have, you know, coveted something or got something that they can draw from that to gain, you know, benefit from, they will help them kind of overcome that need for that, no longer need it, and then break it so that they can avoid possible, I guess, what's the word, kickback from it, where it can cause negative effects upon them. And that was kind of the gist of the first season, is kind of introducing the fact that there's people that have these Tsukumogamis and can use them for benefit to themselves, which could also, in effect, cause damage to them later on, getting rid of those spirits and then going on to the next one.
Which is really more caused by a Malaysian or a, not a Malaysian, a, how did they call it? It was a kind of a mal energy that's in the area that's enhancing these objects, and it's not normal. And
that was something that we kind of learned at the very end of the last season, was that Kazuya was this thing that was drawing things into the area, and he was essentially causing a negative effect to the area. And so that's why he, along with some people that were involved in a lot of those Tsukumogamis with the first season, they all kind of banded together in their school club, and they made a club out of it, and they kind of used the club as a way of, you know, they turned it into one of those clubs, like, come to us for help kind of things. And so they used that as a way of finding out when something was kind of going awry in the school, and they would go to find out if maybe it was being caused by one of these Tsukumogamis. And that kind of continues that right into the second season. They've established that club, and they're still kind of doing some jobs here and there. There was a girl named Mitsuri who had some a friend of hers and some shoes that possibly was one of these Tsukumogamis, and trying to resolve that entire thing, which was a pretty cool story as well. It had an episode with Kazuya and Tsunao. Tsunao is this girl that has a Tsukumogami, which is a sword. And they had a fight with the first season, and in this season, they had this whole segment where Tsunao, because she got beat by Kazuya, now needs to wed him, because obviously that's what she needs to do in order to
keep the honor of the school.
No, it was one of those things of like you've found somebody that who's stronger than you. Obviously, it's a perfect person with good genes, so you need to bring him into the family kind of thing. And that was a ride of an episode. And then it kind of quickly shifts into like a, I kind of wanted to say it was an introduction into an arc, and that was a frustrating thing for me, but it was technically an arc in its own, and it was the Lost Village arc, which is this entire segment where there's a place where Tsukumogami, because Tsukumogami can't survive without the life essence of the one that they are with. And so it kind of goes into a lot of these Tsukumogamis that are treated poorly by their owners, and they're fleeing their owners, but when they do, they die because they don't have energy. There was this place called the Lost Village where they can go to and live because it was being kind of supplied by somebody within the side of that, the Lost Village. And then it kind of goes into, well, this Lost Village is now deteriorating because the power that was within it is now dissipating. And so now they need to get more, a new source of power, which requires them to kill a god. And so that goes right into, again, like right at the very end of the season where they're going to do that. And then it kind of, crap hits the fan and it kind of opens up to the next arc. So I guess the only kind of frustration I'm going right into it. So I guess I pass it off to Chris. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I obviously loved it. It was more of the previous season. You have these goofy hijinks, lots of fun, ecchi, with an underlying kind of really cool storyline that goes on along from just event to event. I mean, having this kind of moment where Kotatsu was broken and fixing that, going into the Mayuiga and kind of the Lost Village and exploring all of that kind of stuff was a lot of fun. And then ultimately into the event of the kind of the season, actually, to me, is some really phenomenal things that were happening in this particular section. So yes, I loved it. I had a lot of fun with this particular season, and can't wait for more if they ever get around to it.
The last episode sucked.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Last episode sucked.
Last episode did kind of suck.
And I hope they fix it. Whatever happened in an episode needs to be fixed.
They need to fix it bad.
Needs to be fixed. No, it's funny because I
was just kind of assuming that when all of this thing happens and is resolved, that problem is going fixed. To be fixed.
Yeah, that's my thought process. It's just going to fix
it.
That.
It's just going to fix it. I'm not even assuming that actually happened.
It sucks because if they get to this next arc and it doesn't fix that, it's going to be like, well, you failed to fix it. Not watching no more. Now, it's funny because it technically was a very light, ecchi season. Like, that technically took the back seat, especially when the Lost Village stuff started popping up. I mean, they technically did, like, a goofy little episode where they were taking out one of these Tsukigami, and it was kind of turned them into, like, a board game-ish type of thing, and it got a little ecchi there. But it was maybe the couple segments in one of the... It was the body swap episode was another one. They kind of did a little bit of ecchi stuff there. But for the rest of it, it was kind of pretty light on the ecchi aspects of the series. And I think that's because they were technically trying to get into more serious stuff. And maybe they were kind of shying away from doing too much to patter in too much comedy when they were trying to do technically a pretty serious story. A lot of the Tsukigamis wanting to survive, having to do something that's kind of questionable. And it's one of those kind of, you know, dog eat dog types of situation with the Tsukigami and the gods. So I think that was probably why they were trying to stray away from it a little bit too much. But yeah, I do like the story they were going into. And I think that was something that I kind of mentioned with the first season was, like, even though I was going into expecting it to just be a goofy comedy ecchi show, for one, they did some pretty awesome action scenes with animation in the first season, which was surprising to me because I wasn't really expecting any of that. And the second season, it kind of adds in the same aspect. You're getting into the aspect where Kazuya was technically causing these Tsukigamis to happen. These Tsukigamis were causing issues to people. There was one specifically, a girl that was using it for whatever reason. They broke it without her trying to... Because, again, if they don't, you know, I guess the person themselves that has a Tsukigami, if they themselves don't give it up, it could cause kind of a reverse action to them and cause damage to them. And this one girl lost her voice because of it. And so it kind of has these repercussions, is the best way to put it, repercussions that they were kind of dealing with. So I was like, okay, cool. You have this little cool mechanic in here that adds some depth to this world and makes it kind of some weight to situations. And so that's the surprise I'd always have with Tsukigamomo, is that there's actually some cool stuff in here amidst all the ecchi and comedy that you would typically good with something like this. It's very basic, old school, etchy comedy. It's something that you just don't really see these days anymore. So it does have that old school aspect to it with, you know, some substance to whatever's happening. Fantastic season this season with Kukukuri. Kukukuri was definitely a character that became quickly best girl for me, especially with this season. A lot of characters kind of took the back seat, but I think that was for the better for, again, focusing on the Lost Village people and trying to get into all those stuff. So yeah, very, very surprising season. And we got a body swap, but we mentioned that with first impressions. We had a body swap episode that actually did a pretty good job of it, whereas it's been a long time since we've got not a body swap, but a gender swap episode. That's, again, one of those old school things that you don't really see in anime anymore. Yeah, overall a good season. Again, even though I think the last episode sucked for a certain reason, and it definitely was a here's the next arc, see you next time. So I don't know if they're going to get another season, but it kind of needs one at this point, especially since they left at that last episode that made me angry. But we'll see. We'll see. Any other thoughts?
No, it'll be all right. We'll make it through it.
That'll be one that I need to check the manga.
We're just waiting.
Get the manga just so I can get that off my chest. So I can find out if it's something I'm going to continue watching or reading or whatever. Yeah. The Sugumomo. Check that out if you're a fan of ecchi. It's one of those ones where I don't really suggest it unless you're okay with the ecchi, just because it definitely doesn't hide from it at all. So, High Score Girl is our next one. High Score Girl Season 2, actually. This one streamed on Netflix, ran for 9 episodes, done by Studio JC Staff. The source is a manga, which I will confirm that this second season does complete the manga. I will say that there is a dash. There's a High School Girl dash, and it's a time jump, and I want that adapted too. So when is that happening is my next question. But yeah, the genres are comedy, game, romance, school, and seinen. The director was Yoshiki Yamakawa, who did Be the Beginning, Danmachi, and Little Busters. Series composition by Tatsuhiko Urahata, who did Cardcaptor Sakura, Gate, and Surezure Children. And yeah, I guess for those that have not listened to our review of it, I don't know if I posted the review of the first season. Might have? I don't know. but yes, we watched the first season, really enjoyed it. Essentially follows a boy named Haruo Yakuchi, who at the time of this story taking place is 1991, at the first season anyways. And in 1991, essentially you have the boom of arcades. This Haruo character is really into video games, plays a lot of them, arcade games. And the overall story kind of follows him as he's, you know, essentially exploring the different arcade games that are coming out over the time. But at the same time, he's meeting different people, especially Ono, who is a girl, a daughter of a very rich family, and also Hidaka, who is a girl that is her mother owns a convenience store where Haruo went to several times to play an arcade game, and she kind of became infatuated by him, watching him play his games, and ends up falling in love with him, so... Little love triangle sprouts up amidst a boy who has no clue whatsoever and just wants to play video games. Is essentially the storyline of High Score Girl.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, we end up watching High Score Girl EX, which I don't know that we did a review on that one, but that one essentially kind of jumps to essentially Ono getting in trouble, kind of being isolated from everybody else, and Hidaka kind of professing her love to Haguchi, and then eventually him creating a video game for Ono while she's kind of being isolated, and then getting poor Jia in trouble, the poor butler. But yeah, the second season kind of just kicks off right where everything left off, and I guess not to get into too spoilery here, but the main gist of it is this is where things kind of really hit the point where decisions really need to be made. And like I said earlier, this is technically the last part of the original manga story and is there their experiences together in this kind of five, I don't want to say it's a 5 year span, but essentially with, again, the first season, it's a lot of it's 1991. And then the second season, a lot of it's in 1995, 1996. And that's kind of where their stories come to a main focal point, their relationships, what they decide going forward and all that kind of stuff. And I think the second season, a lot of it has to do with kind of Hidaka and Ono and their kind of coming to an understanding between each other and their like for Yaguchi. And Yaguchi kind of almost, I would say, coming to a realization of what he does want in his life and going forward with that. So I guess I would just leave it at that. That's the main focal points. You did have this whole segment where Yaguchi goes off to Shibuya. He joins a arcade fight club there, and then they
becomes
fight.
A hoodlum.
Yeah, because a hoodlum. And then they have like a bout with the people from Mizunochi. I can't say that name. Mizunokuchi, which of course is the prefecture that most of the show takes place in, with Hidaka. And it kind of goes in this whole segment where he has a stay over with Hidaka, and then he has a stay over with Ono. And then there's a whole kind of tournament they go to with Ono and Yaguchi. And then it kind of comes to its conclusion. So what's your thoughts on High Score Girl season two without spoiling things? I don't know where I'm going with this.
My good thoughts or my bad thoughts?
You have bad thoughts?
Mostly because I ended up kind of liking both girls. And that is probably my biggest issue is I hurt for the hurt one in the show, in which this point it's pretty obvious who's that person. And it is frustrating because it was that moment was, I know that hurt. I know that hurt. And it hurt me just watching that particular scene. And so, yeah, but overall, I love this show. I think they did wonderful. The nods to the geeky gamer, my geeky gamer side was absolutely on point. I loved a lot of those moments. Seeing a lot of all these kind of, yes, it's frustrating when you get beat and then you kind of want to hit everything, and it's all those moments were great. The kind of moments where the announcer was holding back this one guy from jumping on Yaguchi in the middle of the tournament. So yeah, there was all kinds of just fun moments in this show, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I love the both sides of the kind of love story, if you want to say that. I think that the love story was really where this story actually shined, because it was a true telling of a kind of this geeky kid's love story, and how that actually played out, and whether or not he was truly oblivious to it the entire time until it's right flat in his face and he has to deal with it.
Yeah, that was the funny thing with a lot of this show is it's a nostalgia trip. And that's one of those struggling things. And I'm not sure if that was something that we kind of discussed with the first season, was that it's one of those stories that I think a lot of it has to do with the gamer culture. Like if your enjoyment of the show is going to be extremely higher as somebody who lived in, you know, if you were like an 80s kid and you went into the 90s with all these video games and you play these games in the 90s, you're going to get that nostalgia feeling. And it's crazy because it literally is one of those, it's technically right there alongside our age. Like mm-hmm. They were the same age as me around that time. And so I can totally see myself the same age as these kids in this story it's telling. So it's almost like the Stranger Things kind of thing, where a lot of this enjoyment that people have with Stranger Things is that it captures that age so well. And this does the same thing for the age of arcades. Now, granted, this is Japan, where there's insane arcades, and we had maybe, you know, like a couple of pizza places and stuff that had, you know, 10 or so cabinets in it. So it's a little bit different. I mean, these people, when the game came out, they had those new cabinets sitting in the corner. They already had them fired up with these new games that were just state-of-the-art. You know, they went into 1996, and they had, of course, the big thing then was Street Fighter Alpha 2. And so that was a big focal point, like, oh, here's Street Fighter Alpha 2. And so it captures that. Like, I can't express that enough, that if you were one of those 90s kids that was enjoying this new age of fighting games and all these other video games, this was it. Like, this was so much fun. This is what we got absorbed into. And that was our thing, is after school, was playing these games because they were so much fun. And I think that they captured that so well, this idea of Haruo, and he was just loving these video games and he was getting so invested in them. And there's these girls that he's kind of getting interested in and not really realizing what he has there. And at some point having to kind of move on and realize something that he has there sitting there right in front of him. And even still, when it starts getting to the later points where there's this kind of romance really kind of kicking up, he still has a gamer mentality. Like, he wants to compete to make the decision. And it's like, I kind of see my younger self in him with that situation. Even when he was talking about, you know, getting the license for the scooter, it was like, yeah, even then, that the whole thing of like trying to get your mentality out of video games and just think about, no, it's a scooter. He can't press continue. You need to learn this and learn it properly, kind of thing. That captures that is so well. And I know at some point we were watching the first few episodes together with the second season, one of the things I noted was like, it sucks that when I watch them play these caricatures playing these games in this show, I kind of miss that. That's a nostalgia thing where I remember back then being so captured by these very simple games. Like these were quarter munchers. They were built so simple, the idea that they were just going to pull your quarters out of you just by making you continue on over again. They had the kernel scene where, and that was one game that I didn't know what it was. But they had this kernel game, or this character, the big boss of this one game was a kernel, and as a fighting game, and everybody was like, nobody can beat the kernel, and they had to figure out some stupid gimmick way of beating him. I was like, yeah, I remember that. Like, you just kept playing it over and over again until you figured out a gimmick that you could possibly beat it, and then you were super excited. But it was so stupidly simple, but we still accepted it. I got a lot of kick. I got a huge kick out of the fact that they kept doing the everybody kept messing up the Akuma code to unlock Akuma, and they would end up having to play a different character. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that. it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that stuff. The advancements of the game. They did some fighting Vipers and all these other games that I totally remember from back in the day. That was, again, huge nostalgia trip.
Seeing the Samurai Showdowns, I wish Samurai Showdown was bigger in the show, but I played Samurai Showdown to death.
Yeah, that was the funny thing, because of course they announced that they were going to adapt this show a long time ago, but of course the manga got thrown into a lawsuit with the SNK Playmore, and that's probably a good reason why it took so long for they finally adapted this manga into an anime. And they obviously got it figured out somehow, because they show some clips of Sam's show in there. But yeah, it's I think Netflix was the only one that was able to pull this off, because there's so many good references, so much artwork, so much sprite work that they did in this. This series, I'm talking the entire thing altogether, the entire High Score Girl series. Even though I wasn't a fan early on of the art style and the CG they used, it kind of grew on me over time. But the thing that set this at a whole nother level, and I think that even looking, because I had to look at the manga to see to make sure that it adapted everything. And this took it to a whole nother, like, of course I only read like a couple chapters to see if it was, you know, fully adapted, but just knowing scene by scene what they were adapting and seeing it in manga form, it's like the show was 10 times better, because it elevated with all this pixel art and all this, the gameplay footage and everything took it to a whole nother level. And I cannot express how much having Guile there again, turtling with other Guile, and them start sonic booming each other to express that both Yaguchi and Ono are both essentially turtling in fighting game in terms, and that the fact that they don't want to come see the other person at the time was great. That bringing those pixels arts and stuff into tunk the boom, show is what is what made it a whole other level. And again, the sound effects, the music, everything in the background just hit those nostalgia marks. I don't know that I would get that same feeling if I read the manga, but it's not to say that the manga is bad. It's just, I'm saying, I feel like no matter how you look at it, those aspects being in it took it to another level. So it's a fantastic series. And I'm not even getting into the slice of life elements yet. Cause even though it has all this gamer reference, all the nostalgia for video games, it does still hit very well on the core aspect of having a boy in this age of time getting infatuated by arcades and still having like this romance that tugs him in a different direction, and the effects that his kind of immaturity and gamer self kind of has an effect on those around him. It took him quite a while to get to it, but they finally really did kind of hit on that point of like, you have to make yourself clear, you're hurting people here, dude. And it's like, okay, so somebody finally told him. And then finally had that realization. And again, still having that goofy, nerdy self to him that's trying to see things through video games and competition is at the heart of himself, but what they technically did kind of find interesting in him. And so it's not that it was hitting heavy drama points, even though, as Chris kind of mentioned, the later parts of this, your heart breaks for a lot of these characters. But it still has that sense of the gamer self and not being too superly heavy. It was a solid slice of life. Probably one of the, even though I don't really find it romantic, it still had a good little sense of romance in there that did play well. I mean, you technically are dealing with, kids. They're still going to be kids, so it's not going to be super heavy romance.
I liked the way one of the characters put it. You skipped the romance and went straight for the love.
Yeah. It's one of those ones where it even though, like you said earlier, where you kind of see the person that loses, and I really do see it as more, it's one of those stories where technically nobody wins, and it's life. And that's what I do appreciate about it. It's life. And they didn't try to sugarcoat anything, even though it does kind of get a little bit crazy bombastic with crazy sonic booms through the clouds and turbulence.
That was great. That was so off the wall.
It technically, even though you do have those kind of, just think it's in his head. It is one of those stories where life happens.
A miracle happened, and he blamed it on the video game characters.
Yeah, pretty much. A miracle happened, and he blamed it on, in his own mind, it was because of sonic booms. Again, it's one of those. It is one of those ones that's not afraid to really kind of say that life happens, and it did it really well, and I did enjoy it in the end. So, overall, High Score Girl is a nostalgic masterpiece for anybody that was a 90s kid playing video games. It is a show that has pretty solid comedy, really great little romance kind of mixed in there, very cute characters, all technically trying to find love in their own way, a pretty oblivious kid that eventually gets a realization, and a solid ending to it. So, and again, I really want High Score Girl Dash to be adapted, please. Please. Yeah, anything else on that one?
Just go watch it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not giving enough justice, but no. I don't think I ever will. It is definitely a gem that I'm glad we went into it, even though I, again, had misgivings with the visual style of it. It was something I knew I was going to end up enjoying just because it's again, like I said, it was our childhood. This literally was our time frame.
It's so funny because I probably mentioned it before, but I remember this was one of those mangas I was clipping through a whole bunch of manga. I've seen the front character artwork for Ono and always wanted to read this one, and to actually get to watch it in anime form is kind of a nice treat.
The CG portrait of Jeffrey. I was like, I think I know what that is, because they went to a store and they were like, oh man, we got to get the CG thing. And I forget what the other guy's name was, because I don't remember him as well. The ninja guy. Oh,
that big old long
virtual fighter thing.
Yeah, that was so annoying. He's like, what the heck was that?
He's like, of course you got. And he's like, no, I got Jeffrey. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this gonna do? And it like cuts to him like, man, this is great music for studying. And all of a sudden, you see the stupid CG portrait thing. And it's essentially, for those that don't know, Virtual Fighter. There was a character in it named Jeffrey. And he's like this big buff dude, and he's got like this ponytail, and he's just really strong guy, very masculine. And this, and the CG portrait essentially is like this like bonus, I think it was a bonus disc they got with the game by pre-ordering or buying it like a premium thing or something like that. And you could play it in the Sega Saturn, and it would play a video. And this is like crazy back in the day to think of, but it was essentially just a slideshow, essentially. Like, you can look it up. Look up Jeffrey Virtual Fighter CG Portrait on YouTube. You'll find it. And she's got, like, this very, like, romantic male singer in the background to sing along. And they're just, like, still shots of this Jeffrey character. Back then, of course, it was, like, really high visual quality here. But it's terrible now. And he's, like, just different poses. Then he's on a ship. And he's killing a shark.
Mom comes in and goes, oh, so this is what you're into.
Mother's like, no, I just like the music. And I was just laughing so hard because I'm like, I think I remember that. And it was so stupid.
I just was kind of annoyed by how long it was. That was my only real thinking. I mean, I thought I got the joke. I did get the joke. It was just, okay. After about 3 minutes, okay, we really need to move on. I'm getting really bored and wanting to flip the push the fast forward button.
I think it just makes it just it's just so comical for me because I just remember Jeffrey and how much I like beating him up in the game.
That's kind of
I win. That was his whole thing every time a match ended. I win. I'm like, man, I'm gonna beat you with pie next time. I'm gonna beat your face in with pie. Pie was the best. Yeah, the butt bump on Fighting Vipers. The moment she did, I'm like, oh, I forgot that was like the entering of her combo. Oh my gosh, this is nostalgia. All this stuff was just, loved it, every single bit of it. And again, like I said, I fully acknowledge that I think a good portion of this show is based on gamer knowledge and gamer nostalgia. So I really do kind of question myself if I would suggest to anybody that doesn't have at least some nostalgia there for video games in the 90s, because you're going to kind of miss a good portion of the show. Not to say that it's not going to be a good comedy romance type show mixed in there and that people might still understand what's going on. I just think a lot of my crazing and praising for the show is based on that. So fully acknowledging that to kind of temper people's expectations if they want to go into it not having that nostalgic feel. So yeah, good stuff. If you don't know much about games, you're probably going to learn something. It's probably a good way of actually learning about that time frame of video games and stuff. Like how some arcades would make it really cheap to play in their arcades, but then bump up the difficulties, which is totally a possible thing.
It makes me wonder, because I do know it's possible.
You can set the difficulties.
But it makes me wonder if they did that to any of the ones that we played, and it's like,
I wouldn't doubt it. That we didn't know back then. You didn't know that that was a thing.
How many times did we play Golden Axe and we just died within 5 seconds? It's like, okay, did we really suck that much, or did they have it that tweaked up high?
Or Ghosts and Goals. They were quarter munchers. All those arcade games were designed to munch down your quarters. And I mean, that's like Street Fighter. I remember it's funny because like when we played it at home, it was like so great that you could just fight M. Bison as many times as you want, because in the arcade, M. Bison was the, you finally got to the last boss,
and he's impossible.
Ruin you. but you don't want to leave the arcade because you got to him and you keep pumping the quarters in trying to beat this guy that literally feels impossible because he was built to be impossible.
No, honestly, the games that were absolutely built for our family was like Final Fight or I remember the Ninja Turtles.
Turtle Arcade, yeah.
It just having those four and me, Bobby and Andrew and my dad just all ganging up on these games was just too much fun. The Simpsons, they had a Simpsons one as well.
Yeah. A lot of fun. again, a lot of nostalgia there. So, yeah, I think we've talked that one to death. Definitely a suggestion. Definitely enjoyed it, and that's good. I'm glad that we managed to almost get 2 hours on a much lower amount of shows than I expected we were going to actually have. But I think, again, like I said, I kind of expected there was a few shows in here that we want to talk about quite a bit. So, yeah. If you guys enjoyed any shows this season, definitely let us know in the comments for this particular podcast episode. We hope you guys enjoyed this run-through of all these shows. And as usual, stay tuned to us to get our take on the next season, because we're going right into summer. It's right literally next month or next week. So
just throwing it out there, if you got questions, you might want to go start putting them on there, because I'm pretty sure we got discussionals coming up.
Yeah, we had to talk about some The World Ended With You getting an adaptation. And Trigger doing a cyberpunk game anime, so that's pretty crazy. But yeah, it was good that we managed to still get a lot of shows this season for review, because we did have a lot of shows get canceled and pushed into the summer. But I think we still managed to get a lot of shows in here that were still really fantastic shows to go through. So yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed this run through of the spring 2020 anime season reviews. Again, we're at TakuSpirit.com. That's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community in the forum links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff. And we hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Oos!
Hakanai hikari.